Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 2nd, 2013, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is We Are Young. It is a follow-up to episode number 30 called My Generation. Now, every five episodes or so, I like to deviate from the case-based, evidence-based medicine formula where we critically review an article or a topic. The goal of the SGM, however, remains the same, to cut that knowledge translation window from 10 years to 1 year. This is so you, the listeners, can provide the best EBM care to the patients you treat. It uses social media to turn Med-Ed on its head. The SGM is part of the Free Open Access to Medical Education, or FOMED, project. Episode 30 was well received. It looked at the generational tension the SGM has created between baby boomers, faculty, and Gen Y learners. These two groups have different priorities, styles, and goals, among other things. Information technology, and specifically social media, has been embraced by the Gen Ys, more so than the boomers. The SGM has empowered students to have the latest, greatest EBM in the palm of their hands. They can also listen to the podcast while working out or turn their car into a classroom. And while they may have the information readily available in the lecture hall or at the patient's bedside, they lack the experience at times to put this information into perspective. Episode 30 discussed these issues, but, and yes, there is always a but, one of the SGM's skeptical listeners, and she knows who she is, correctly pointed out two things. The first was that all the guests on the show were boomers. And the second constructive criticism was that they were all men. So I have searched high and low for a group of Gen Yers to provide that fair and balanced perspective. Today we have three very bright and very talented students joining the SGM. Aaliyah taught the Twitter lecture at the Society of Rural Physicians of Canada, SRPC, meeting last month in Victoria, BC, and I was immediately impressed with her and enjoyed the presentation. I hope she doesn't mind that I was tweeting through the whole lecture. Jimmy is a medical student who will be working with me this summer on a new social media project we're launching this fall. And Beth is the third guest who I also met at SRPC and went, wow. She attended my lecture on social media, kept me on my toes. How? By asking me questions and being skeptical. Yes, she is a Gen Yer who is skeptical of all this social media stuff and how it fits into medical education and life. So Aaliyah, Jimmy, and Beth, can you introduce yourself to the SGM audience? And I'll start with Aaliyah.
Hi, so my name is Aaliyah. I'm a third year student at the University of British Columbia. Right now I'm studying in the beautiful Okanagan at Kelowna General Hospital, looking towards hopefully a future in family medicine. I'm mostly interested in social media, rural medicine, and global health.
Jimmy, why don't you say hello to the SGM audience?
Hi everyone, my name is Jimmy. I'm a second year student out at the lovely University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario. Currently finishing up my second year pre-clerkship, so I'm eager to hit the wards in next year in the clinical year. I'm interested right now in surgery, social media, and just kind of mobile technology and healthcare.
Jimmy, you're sounding a little tired. Are they working you too hard at Western?
It's just a regular day out here in London.
Oh, yeah, just a regular day at the grind. And finally, Beth, my soft spot for the skeptic. Say hello.
Hi there, my name's Beth Josie. I'm a third-year medical student also from the University of Western Ontario. I'm currently doing my psychiatry rotation and clerkship out in Chatham, Ontario. And admittedly, yes, I am somewhat of a skeptic of current social media trends, but I am also interested in medicine, especially rural family practice.
Great. Well, as the SGM listeners can now attest, we have a great panel of students. So I'm going to start with Aaliyah, because you are the Twitter expert. I sat in your lecture learning from you. You were teaching the master. So I have a few questions for you, Aaliyah, and I'm going to start with, how do you see Twitter fitting into medical education?
Well, I'm pretty honored, Ken, because you're one of my Twitter idols, so there you go. In terms of Twitter and healthcare, I think for me as a student, it's been the best outlet into a world that I don't really have access to every day on the wards in the classroom. Getting to talk to people who are interested in global health, in rural medicine, keeping up to date on the latest and greatest in areas that I'm interested in. It allows me an outlet to talk about ideas or considerations or dreams and thoughts that I have. And it's a hugely therapeutic initiative in a lot of ways.
So you're telling me that in 140 characters or less, you're expanding your horizons?
It's unbelievable how much you can learn, reflect, and think.
Because I think some of us boomers have this opinion like, well, how could you get anything important across in such a brief little process?
Right. And I think a lot of skepticism comes up around that in Twitter. And especially when I tell some of my attendings about information or articles that I've read on Twitter. Really, it's a gateway. You can make an interesting comment and link it up to an article. You can add a link to a blog, and you can even engage in discussion. It's not so much the length of what you say, but it's the topic that you're talking about. And Twitter, in a lot of ways, is the best way to connect ideas. So it's not just 140 characters about something that you are interested in. It's how you choose to link it up to other areas of healthcare or development or something else you're interested in, using hashtags or handles.
Well, I think it's perfectly suited for emergency physicians because our attention span tends to be less than 140 characters.
Emerge physicians and med students alike.
So let's talk a little bit about Twitter etiquette then. Do you think it's rude to Twitter during a lecture?
That's a really interesting question, and it's one that UBC has been trying to talk about and approach, because I think there's a gap between people like the Gen Ys who are interested in social media and find it as a way of connecting ideas and a way of integrating knowledge. But there's this generation gap in that a lot of people see it as a disruption, equivalent to texting or talking on the phone during lecture. I think it really depends on the way that it's approached when you're talking to lecturers and students. I've been in lectures where active tweets are happening and a discussion is happening parallel to the lecture, which really adds a lot of depth and insight into what we're talking about. And I think it can be a really useful tool. It's to be a certain amount of education around how it can be used as a tool, because there is a natural skepticism around distracting people during lectures and having, you know, side conversations, and it can create a lot of weariness.
Do you think that Twittering during lecture then enriches the educational experience?
Hashtag yes.
Ooh, I like that. Hashtag yes. How about on clinical rounds? Do you think it's rude to be twittering away while you're on clinical rounds?
In terms of the respect aspect of twittering during social gatherings, I think that on rounds, one has to be cognizant that the patient might not understand what's happening. So even if the entire healthcare team is engaged in Twitter conversation or in actively tweeting, or looking up information, even if it's just Googling on your phone, the patient really is the center of care. And if they're not aware of what you're doing, it can really create a sense of unimportance in the patient. And that would be something that I would be particularly concerned about.
Aaliyah, I've given you some softball questions to start with, and now I'm going to hit you with the really, really hard question. And it's a two-part question. And it is, how does it make you feel as a Gen Yer when a patient twitters during a visit? And how do you think it makes a baby boomer feel when a patient twitters during a visit?
Great question. And I'm not sure that I've ever experienced someone tweeting during an encounter in the clinic.
I would say that I would probably be beyond ecstatic if someone pulled out their phone and started using social media. And I would probably have to applaud them for that, because I would definitely appreciate it as someone who is really active on social media. I think this speaks to a bit of a generation gap. I think, like I mentioned before, there would be a natural skepticism for people, regardless really of their age or generation, if they're not engaged in social media, and they might be hesitant about what this person is doing and why they're doing it. And they might even be guarded and wonder if they've done something wrong or if there's a negative connotation to what they're saying. But I think in general, the more we talk about it and the more social media becomes a presence and a fixated presence in society, we're going to be able to have more of these discussions and allay some of those fears around social media.
So what you're saying is it's going to take time for it to be incorporated into regular interaction in the medical field.
Definitely. It's going to take time for acceptance.
Okay, Aaliyah, I'm going to move on to Jimmy Yan now. Jimmy Yan, you're going to talk to me. This guy is a social media machine. He's a big part of the Ontario Medical Students Association. And I say big because you have to meet Jimmy to know this. Big social media persona. Now let's talk a little bit about podcasts if we can, Jimmy, and how you use that information. First of all, besides the SGEM, of course, which you listen to, right? Are there any other podcasts you would recommend to the SGEM listeners?
I'm actually a really big fan of this one that comes out of U of A, Surgery 101. It's a very similar structured style, like 15 minutes, 10 minute styles, like presentations where they just talk about the basics of like surgical diseases. And I think, like for me as a student that's interested in that, it's a really good way to get exposed to some of these subjects and reinforce some things that we get taught in the classroom, especially things around the GI system and vascular system.
What's the name of that podcast again?
Surgery 101.
Okay, I'll throw Surgery 101 up on the blog when this gets posted. Now, we like to do case-based learning, so I'm going to throw you out a case, Jimmy. Let's say you're at the gym. It's unusual, right? You're at the gym.
Very unusual.
And you're listening to a great podcast on a topic you will be getting later in the day. And the lecturer starts giving you information that seems 10 years out of date. How would you handle that issue?
Just to clarify, what I was listening on the podcast seems to be more recent than what I was just experienced or in the classroom. Or is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm asking you, so you've gotten this information from a social media source, and in this case, a podcast. And you're a conscientious student, so you downloaded this podcast based on the topic you were going to be taught later that day. And then the lecturer starts giving you information, and you're like, whoa, buddy, this seems way out of date. How would you handle that?
For me, I'd probably approach the lecturer after class and just introduce myself and kind of explain the parts of his or her lecture that I encountered, mentioning that I was just doing some more of my own active learning. And there seemed to be a little bit of discongruent information, and just asked if they could further explain what they meant there, just because I'd be interested to know which one was more, or whose judgment here is being more weighted.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Jimmy. So how do you know that the podcast you're listening to is good information? Because I assume you're giving some kind of credibility to the authority figure that's teaching you in a formal traditional lecture theater, and yet this thing is just downloaded onto your iPhone.
Yeah, there's definitely an authority figure mentality with the person in lecture, and also there's also a natural authority that's given from the experts over the podcast, because if you look at their credentials, a lot of them are very big name physicians as well, spending a lot of time working hard, and they do this out of their own interest to help further medical education. I think there's an inherent level of trust that you have to give towards these online and mobile tools, that they've been curated to present the most accurate and recent data. But at the same time, I mean, it's not something that you should just blindly accept for the truth as well. I mean, at the end of the SGM podcast, there's always, you're always saying to be skeptical of what you hear, even if it's on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine as well. So in the end of the day, I think it's up to the learner to kind of be a little conscientious of that too, and just try to collaborate as much information as possible to see what the whole picture is.
Now, you're not just trying to butter me up with all this skeptical talk, so I'm not going to throw you a hard question like I did to Aaliyah, are you, Jimmy?
Bring it on.
Okay, here it is. All right, so would you use that case that I just gave you as a teachable moment? And would you become the master? And would you show the professor what a podcast is and how to access that information?
I think it really depends on the situation. If the physician is familiar with podcasting or others like mobile health tools or applications, then it would be a great way to just launch a new discussion about them and perhaps be able to get some ideas from them, share some ideas that I have, and really like gain another network contact in that area. So just kind of like learn a little bit more about this field and who's kind of big players in that. They aren't really, I'd say, as fluent in this a new form of technology. Yeah, it'd be a good opportunity to kind of mention that there's a lot of different tools out there, and that maybe if they could check it out and just let us know, based off their opinion, what they think the quality of this podcast tool would be like. Maybe it would also shine some light into my understanding of whether or not I should put as much faith into that podcast or that application or, you know, that website.
So you could turn it into a teachable moment is what you're saying, I think.
Yeah, it's a great time to just initiate a conversation and have a dialogue over the subject.
Great. Now, here's another hardball question. You're paying a lot of money for medical school, aren't you?
Yeah, tell me about it.
What expectations do you have that your instructors should be up to date on the latest evidence-based medicine? Told you it'd be a hardball question.
That's a really good question. I think that there's a lot of talk about, I guess, professional obligation from the student side of things. And I guess the expectation should be twofold, that if we want to be taught, if we expect to be good learners, then we should be taught by the best information possible, and that our instructors should be upholding, their end of the bargain.
That's exactly why I asked you that question, Jimmy, because, I had that similar conversation with the boomers, you know, and we were asking the boomers what they expected of the students. And so I wanted to turn the tables and say, what do the students expect of their educators? And I think you answered that very well. Do you think that profs then should be listening to podcasts regularly, and why?
Part of the field, when we're introduced as students, we get like, there's a lot of, I guess, buzzwords that are thrown around. And one of the ones is lifelong learner. And I think if medical schools really believe in that, and the people that are in those institutions that are our sort of mentors and our instructors and our authority figures really believe in that for us and want us to model that sort of thing from them, then they should be open to these sorts of tools to help them learn as well.
I love it. I love it, Jimmy, the lifelong learner thing. I absolutely love that comment. I do. I mean, we're expecting to teach students. We want you to be lifelong learners. You got to be lifelong learners. And we got to walk the walk if we're going to talk the talk. And I think that's a really great point you just made about everyone, not just the students, but the faculty being committed to lifelong learning. And in this case, it means learning something new like social media. So now, Jimmy, I'm going to turn to Beth. And you know I've got a soft spot for Beth because she's a fellow skeptic. And it's her turn to turn her skeptical eye on all this social media mumbo jumbo. So Beth, talk to me. Why are you skeptical of social media?
So sometimes I do tend to be skeptical of social media. And the reasons for that really have little to do with education or medicine in particular, but more about social trends in general. I think that the trend of connectedness, and especially of sort of a superficial connectedness between people via social media, particularly things like Facebook and like less so Twitter, but still the same idea, that has a real danger for the way that we interact with people in person. And so I see it as a very common problem that people of our generation are more distractible. And this has been said by many, many people in many contexts. But that distractibility prevents us from doing a lot of things. One of the things that it prevents us doing is focusing effectively in whether it be in lecture or when studying outside of lecture, even say between appointments. There are often demands being made of our time that have nothing to do with our clinical context. And we are expected to meet those demands. So for example, even basic email, which is absolutely required as a professional in pretty much any field, but certainly in medicine, there's a hidden workload that's added on to what we do in a day. You know, I asked Jimmy the other day, how many emails does he receive in a day? And he said 100. I asked Ken and he said 150. Now, if you think about the amount of time that it takes to answer 100 or 150 emails that all have some way of pertaining to you and were sent specifically to you, that's a lot of time. And so people resort to different ways of dealing with that. One of those is to answer them at every opportunity. So you'll see students and doctors answering emails, even between patients. And this may be a distraction for some people and may not for others. Some people may be able to manage it. Certainly there's this response when you get a message, whether it's a text message, you know, beeping or vibrating in your pocket, or the Facebook coming to the same thing. It's this response that you are immediately pulled away from the person that you're talking to and put into this environment of the social media. And I think that has a real danger in preventing us from being present to people. And I think that the patient-physician relationship has always been about presence and about the relationship in person, face-to-face, between the physician and the patient. And when that's put in danger, it makes me quite nervous.
I can understand why you'd be nervous because, like you said, it is a therapeutic contact that involves being social with the person. And if you're being pulled away by social media that's interrupting the therapeutic interaction, that could be and probably is quite distracting. But regardless of that, do you think then that there is a role for social media in medical education?
Absolutely. I think, like anything else, social media is a tool, and you can use a tool well, and you can use a tool poorly. My concern is mostly about the way that it is usually used.
So it's not about the actual device itself, it's how the device is used or how the tool is used?
Absolutely. I think it's often used very poorly, and even with the best of intentions, it causes a lot of trouble. But when used well, it's absolutely an amazing tool that can be very helpful for medical education and for medicine in general, for life in general, absolutely.
Because you've seen that it is a tool that's used poorly in your experience, do you think that there should be a course taught to students on social media if there isn't one already?
You'd have to be very careful about it. Because if you're talking about generational differences, Gen Yers hate to be taught about technology. We would rather just do it.
Okay, well then that's my follow-up question. Then do you think that there should be a course for the professors to take on social media?
Potentially.
Because we used to sit in lectures all the time. We're used to that. That's how I was trained, to be in a lecture hall.
Mm-hmm. I think what we do need to do is foster a culture that is respectful and that incorporates modes of social media in a way that that teaches us what the etiquette around it is and how it can be used so that it doesn't offend or sort of turn away your patients, either of older generations or younger, and so that you become the best physician that you can be. So using that where effective and avoiding it where it's dangerous.
So it enriches the contact, not diminishes the contact.
It absolutely should. And if it doesn't belong there.
Well, because you are a skeptic, and I've asked everybody else a really hard question. My hard question for a skeptic then would be, what do you think the best aspect of social media can be?
I suspect that the best aspect of it is that it's going to put people on the same page faster. And I think that that is a good thing.
Okay, we've heard from our Gen Y panel of experts, and I want to thank them all for taking their evening to participate in the episode number 35, We Are Young. Each one of them should have something special to do at the end of this podcast. Now, we normally have a BEAM bottom line, or best evidence in emergency medicine bottom line, summarizing the topic we have discussed. So I'm going to turn to Aaliyah, because how else could we summarize something on social media unless we did it in 140 characters or less? So Aaliyah, what's the take-home message for the SGEM listeners about social media and medical education, in your opinion?
Well, in 140 characters exactly, my message would be that the hashtag SOME, which is social media world, is an extension of you as a learner. So as you are on the wards, be thoughtful, be curious, respectful, humorous, and use good grammar.
Love it. Thank you so much, Aaliyah. Now, Jimmy, I'm going to give you the Keener contest. Yes, last week we had a winner, and it was my very first resident from years and years ago. And because he was my first resident, that also makes him my number one resident. The super smart guy named Travis Nairn, Trapper John MD, or as my kids know him as, Uncle Travis. He correctly knew that the first person to describe in 1899 the post-LP headache was Dr. Beer himself. Talk about commitment to research, taking one for the team. So Jimmy, what is the question the SGEM listeners must answer and then email me at thesgem@gmail.com to win a cool skeptical prize? What's the question, Jimmy?
So I think in light of our theme of social media and Twitter, it's only fair that this Keener contest will be related to Twitter itself. So what is the hashtag or the handle for the social media and healthcare movement in Canada? So this one is specifically to those who are interested in social media and healthcare in Canada, not in general or in the US, Canadian content.
Excellent, Canadian content, I love it. Okay, and Beth, finally, who's the fellow skeptic? I'm gonna give you, if you would be so kind, to give the tagline to close out episode number 35, We Are Young.
I would absolutely be so kind. Be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you learned it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk with you next week. Bye. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.